Hello and welcome to, I wouldn't call it an emergency podcast because it's happening the next day. What's one step below emergency? Urgent? An urgent podcast?
It's an emergency for me,
and you
Brian.
Don't go to the ER?
It's an emergency for me.
It's as fast as podcast producer Andrew Hahn and longtime Clipper follower Andrew Hahn could move. Podcast.
There's nothing more important than sleep.
It's the sleep is important, especially when you live on the West Coast. Podcast on the Blake Griffin trade. This is just a fantastic panel. So much better than my normal panel on Fridays. Oh, did I say that out loud? I was thinking that. In Oklahoma City, Royce Young. Yes. Royce, I guess this may close the door on Blake ever playing ever at home again.
I think it. Well, yeah, it might. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if he wants to come do a Twilight tour in Oklahoma.
In Seattle, Kevin Pelton, who has already written 6,000 words on this trade.
Not quite.
And in Fort Myers, where I'll bet it is. Is it Fort Myers proper?
I am in Naples.
Naples.
And it is a cool 65 degrees today.
I always think of, whenever I think of Naples, I think of Fort Myers, because to get to Naples, you have to fly to Fort Myers.
That's the best airport in the world.
It is a good airport. And an example of an airport that they did this in Indianapolis too, where they kept the airport. They just said, forget the old one. Let's build a new one over on the other side. And just pretend the other one didn't exist, and we could learn so much at other airports from doing that. But anyway, I won't talk about airports now. It's for a different podcast, Bobby Marks. This trade, and I think the Clippers and Pistons are kind of proud of this. There was no previous leakage of this trade. It was, by the time it became public, it was done. The players had been informed and came together. I'm sure they had been talking for a while, but came together pretty quickly. You know, I think Woj said it was a 6-day process, but really hit the gas after the Pistons lost their 8th consecutive game the other night on Sunday. And that's rare in this day and age. And especially rare, I think, is an environment where player with this much money on his contract gets moved. Bobby would probably have to research this. It may be the most money that's ever been traded with left on a contract. I can't think of another time where there have been more money left. There have been guys who have been making more in a certain year have been traded, but the four and a half years of $175 million contract got traded here. Which is sort of a new world order in terms of, and that is important in this, but I'll just yield the floor and listen to what you guys think initially on this major move.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Detroit was kind of the under-the-radar team all along, and they're vulnerable based on them losing 8 in a row. I mean, you know, when you have a high payroll and you've got basically a mandate from your ownership group to make the playoffs combined with this losing streak. I did not see a Blake Griffin trade coming through. I thought we were just looking at maybe Avery Bradley and Stanley Johnson and maybe even Henry Ellenson there. So I was stunned. It is a high risk move. And I've been involved in a lot of high risk moves. So I know when they come about here. And you inherit basically, I mean, that contract's only four or five months old. It's $171 million. And from what I understand, it's not insurable based on his previous injuries as far as having some exclusions there. That's usually what happens when you sign one of these new deals, that an insurance company's not going to exclude certain body parts from previous injuries. And now you've got, this is your team. This is your Piston team here, and that I compare them to the Pelicans. That's who I compare them to. Although I would certainly rather have Anthony Davis and healthy DeMarcus Cousins, but this is their roster, and they better hit some home runs in free agency with minimum guys and tax mid level here. But you know, they've got some catching up to do. There's no shoo-in that they're going to be in the playoffs when we get going in April.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the interesting part is, you know, for all the long-term risk they've taken on with Blake Griffin's contract, this deal doesn't feel like a slam dunk in terms of improving them now, just from the standpoint of they have gotten so weak on the wing. I mean, Tobias Harris, you at least had the option of playing him at small forward. You can't do that with Blake Griffin. And then Avery Bradley, for as poorly as he had played this season in Detroit, you know, still starting shooting guard. Now you're turning those spots over to, you know, I assume Stanley Johnson and Reggie Bullock, a Clippers cast-off, which is kind of intriguing. And Bullock's played pretty well this year. Johnson has played extremely poorly, although he's had some better moments of late. And then you've got behind them Luke Kennard and Langston Galloway, and that's it as far as wings. So you're really counting on Blake Griffin being able to cover for a lot of weakness elsewhere and to do it immediately with, you know, integrating him on the fly into an offense that has been built around Andre Drummond's skills, and then at some point figure out how to get Reggie Jackson back in the mix when he's healthy. That's a lot of question marks for a team that's, I think, 2.5 games out of the playoffs as we speak now.
Brian, you kind of touched on this, but one of the more remarkable things about this deal is not just that word didn't leak out when the trade was like in the process of kind of happening until it was right up till done, but like nobody even knew that Blake Griffin was really even being shopped per se. It was interesting. I had a conversation with somebody the night before, and they kind of teased that info to me, and I was kind of like, yeah, everybody, but we were talking about trade deadline and who might be doing what, and you know, the Clippers were a topic of conversation, and you know, the focus was on, of course, DeAndre Jordan and what happens with DeAndre Jordan, and that there is clearly a, I don't know what the description of it would be, but you know, maybe a disconnect between front office and coaching staff, and there's a clear, you know, there's a fork in the road right now for the Clippers, and you know, some people want to go one way and some people wanted to go the other way, but most people assume that just meant with DeAndre Jordan, and then you were going to restructure and probably do some, you know, keep Blake Griffin. But apparently Blake Griffin was, you know, was very much on the trade market since early January. And, you know, that to me, it's really surprising that just nobody really, at least publicly, had a real idea that that was the case, that the Clippers were willing to make this drastic of a move. But, you know, you talk about, you know, a player of Blake Griffin's caliber and how stunning this type of deal. And, you know, just kind of reading the reaction to it, a lot of people are like, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you know, do you really want to pay Blake Griffin that kind of money when he's 33 years old or whatever? I mean, just imagine a world, you know, a year and a half ago, or 2 years ago, where Blake Griffin gets traded for this. And you would have said, what is going on? I mean, like, what are they doing? What are the Clippers doing to make this sort of move? They didn't even get Stanley Johnson or Luke Kennard or any of the Pistons' true young, you know, young lottery picks that they've had back. So it's a different world we kind of live in this season in the NBA where Blake Griffin goes for this sort of deal with that much money left on his contract.
Yeah, I don't know if he was being shopped. I mean, there's nuance here. I mean, Bobby can speak to this. There's nuance.
They were looking for a trade, though.
Yes, but I mean, I heard that as far back as November. I mean, you know, in my analysis of it, I thought the Clippers did a really nice job when Chris Paul basically informed them, hey, I want to go to Houston. I thought they made as good of a deal as they possibly could because they picked up some assets and movable parts and they didn't take on any bad money, in my opinion. And then everything else they did last summer, I felt was a poor decision. I thought Gallinari was an insane contract, especially because to do the Gallinari deal, they had to sacrifice a first-round pick to get off of Jamal Crawford. And maybe getting off of Jamal Crawford was a smart move, and maybe you know they would be doing that with a first-round pick anyway. But I didn't like that deal. I didn't like giving Blake the full 5 years, with fifth year being his option. I just thought their major moves after the Chris Paul trade were not. I like Teodosic. I guess that counts, but I didn't like it. And I think as early as November, I think that there was a indication that they were trying to dig themselves out of it. At least there was some GMs chattering. I think they may trade Blake as early as November, I feel like. And so it was out there. But, you know, I did this exercise. Andrew, did you and I do this exercise? Maybe six weeks ago about like if you trade Blake, where could you trade him?
Oh, yes. Yes, we did this exercise.
And we only came up with like Bobby – like I think Andrew and I went through it and we sort of thought maybe Phoenix who had
interest. They had interest in him. Yep.
But like really the Clippers in my mind, and the Clippers won't say this. In my mind, the Clippers got lucky that the Pistons got desperate. And, you know, Stan Van Gundy, I think, is in danger of losing his job. Again, that's not Tom Gore saying it. That's just me analyzing it. And I think that they got lucky that they found a buyer in a market where there was a dearth of buyers.
Yeah. You know what, Brian, too? It reminds me of guys, teams that overpay restricted free agents in the summer and try to use them as a trade chip down the road. Because if you lose them, then you really won't have cap space to go out and get a get free agent. You know, Portland, for example, with Myers Leonard and that group, Harkless from last year. And it's almost like, well, we can't let Blake leave because who is going to kind of – do we have the room? Can we go out and get a free agent? It would basically be a patchwork. Well, let's sign him to a max or, you know, high level, close to a max contract. And let's just play it by ear and let's see what maybe he can turn into. Fortunately for them, they were able to get something back. I mean, Portland is basically stuck with those guys right now. So they got fortunate. You know, the interesting part with Blake is that, you know, his contract's not a max contract. And he took a haircut on the premise that they were going to stay under luxury tax. And all their contracts are structured with, you know, Teodosic, how they did all their summer deals with them staying right under the luxury tax. So it's not a full max. He got a little money back. He got like $860,000 based on the trade bonus. So I don't want to say sacrifice when a guy's making $30 million a year.
Rough life.
Yeah. So, but it is. It's funny because when I look at Blake, it's like the goal was. I mean, eventually it seemed like he was eventually going to be moved because this team was not a. You know, it was a team that was kind of hanging around. It wasn't in that, you know, if you're going to rebuild, you better go 2 feet into the deep end there.
Haven't done that. They're hedging a little bit with the way they've done it. And we'll see if they make a DeAndre Jordan trade, what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like, you know, Woj had the explanation yesterday that they're trying to remain competitive while also rebuilding their assets. And I think they actually do have a chance to do that, particularly if they just trade DeAndre and not Lou Williams. I mean, they managed to be pretty successful while DeAndre was out of the lineup for a period of games there. And I think that's probably telling of why DeAndre's value as a trade on the trade market probably won't be what people think it is, because it's just so easy to scare up effective center play in the NBA right now. I guess Willie Reed was some part of that rotation. You know, it depends maybe whether they think that Boban could be part of the rotation now, alongside Montrezl Harrell.
I doubt it.
Not get a starting center, Richard. Yeah. I mean, and Boban, like, that's one of the contracts that got Detroit into this mess, is paying $7 million for a guy who turned out to be, you know, maybe you can play him 10 minutes on some nights, which is kind of the classic Stan Van Gundy move.
Yeah.
So I feel like one of the things that has been really covered heavily was that the Clippers, you know, wronged Blake because when they made their pitch last year that they, you know, did the act where they mimicked raising his number to the rafters. By the way, he still can have his number retired. That's not been validated.
But he can't be a lifelong Clipper, Brian.
That's true. But
Clipper for life.
Okay. Clipper for life.
Where are those t-shirts right now? They might be collector's item, right?
That's right. With those, who else was on that t-shirt?
Nelson Mandela.
Gandhi.
Luther King Jr. Gandhi.
Yeah. Well, that didn't age well from the moment it was.
Yeah,
it
that was bad
put
all
out
around.
But. Let's just be dead honest here, okay? Blake scheduled a meeting with the Suns because he was trying to leverage the Clippers into giving the fifth year. The Clippers gave the fifth year, and as Bobby said, he didn't get the full max, but it was like a 98%.
Yeah. He also didn't get a no-trade clause, which is something he could have gotten.
Okay.
Right? Now, he was eligible. So, Brian, you can take it. Yeah.
How many no trade clauses are there? I know
three.
The answer. There's three. Yeah. These three players are, do you guys know?
Melo, LeBron, and Dirk, right?
That's it.
Right. And Melo's has already been compromised. Okay. So, really, we've got two no trade clauses that exist in the NBA. Now,
Melo still has his, though. I mean,
I know, but he's been traded. So,
but he had to approve it. That was the whole point.
I know, but he's still been traded.
Well,
my point
actually,
is,
I've got my finger in the air right now.
Would he have been traded to some place that he didn't want to go if he didn't have a no trade clause?
But my point is, these things are extraordinarily rare. Okay, there are some de facto no trade clauses because of contract styles. For example, Nico Mirotic has a no trade clause right now, but these are not given out. And Blake chose to leverage his situation by scheduling the meeting with the Suns, which was leaked within 5 seconds of it being scheduled, because the entire point of it was to leverage. He ended up not having it. So he played his game. He got what he wanted, which was the fifth year. And by the way, the fifth year was at his option, which was a concession that the Clippers agreed to. They probably would have preferred it to be a team option. But they gave it to him at his option, and he didn't get the no trade. I mean, Steph Curry didn't get a no trade. I mean, these things – now, Steph Curry, in my mind, should have gotten a no trade, but he didn't get a no trade. So these things are negotiated, and Blake won on a lot of points here. So I understand that this is all Clipper for life stuff, but he played the leverage game to get what he wanted. The Clippers played the leverage game to get what they wanted, and this is all business at the end of the day.
Well, to me, the question is, Brian, is that – do you think that the Clippers that held that ceremony or whatever, where they walked Blake through the museum in Staples Center, I mean, that was essentially a different front office. I mean, Lawrence Frank was still in charge of things, but, you know, that was quote unquote the Doc Rivers Clippers still, right? So, I mean, Mike Winger had not joined. He joined the Clippers in August, maybe, or, you know, early September.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it is kind of fair to say that it was, while there's still a lot of the same leadership in place with the Clippers, that, you know, the group that put together the and you know, we kind of talked about it, but I mean, if Doc Rivers is still running the Clippers, I don't know that this trade happens. It probably doesn't, right? So so it is, you know, it is maybe a little unfair to completely pan the Clippers for the Clipper for life thing when they had a regime change, essentially. And, you know, there's different people with a different vision running the show.
I know, but he didn't sign the contract because there were tears running down his face when he saw the jersey going up and going, yes, yes, I will sign it. He played hardball to get his money. That all that other stuff was just window dressing. And they have to go through with it because otherwise it makes them look bad. Like, but come on, Bobby. I mean,
well, Bobby, how much credibility does this hurt for the Clippers? Is this a long term effect or is this like a short term stain?
Nah, short term. Guys, forget about this. I mean, we all go through it. We go through it every year, the recruiting. Some teams take it up a different level, and certainly the Clippers. I mean, having worked with Lawrence for you know, a long time in New Jersey, I mean, Lawrence was the master at this stuff. I mean, we went recruiting 1 year when we were targeting Rajah Bell and Sharif in that group in 2005, and you know, Lawrence rolled the red carpet out for those guys. So, you know, we didn't get them, and it's different than this. But no, I mean, this is the business. You know, it's the business of basketball, and they'll probably take a 48-hour hit on this, and or maybe when we get into the summer of 2019, and they have $70 million in cap space, and maybe this resurfaces. But I don't really pay too much attention to it.
Like, if they had gone through all of that, you know, stuff, and at the end of the day said, and Blake, here is our 4-year contract offer. Blake's like, all right, I'm going to Phoenix on the plane. That's all window dressing. It's all, I mean, it's all nice. Like, you buy the billboards or whatever. At the end of the day, show me the money. That's what it was come down to. It came down to the money. He got his fifth year guaranteed if he wants it. It's what, 30, how much, Bobby? 36 million?
Yeah. I mean, it's in the last year, $36.8 million.
He to get that $36.8 million.
No, I'm sorry, which, $38.9 million in the last year.
36.8
fourth year.
Okay, yeah. With your permission, I'm gonna round it to $40 million for $40 million. And by the way, now that Blake's not in California, the tax difference, it's going to be worth millions more to him.
So, I had an accountant.
Housing is much cheaper in Detroit, I assume, too.
I had an accountant call me last night wanting to, like, write a story, and I was like, I don't have time right now to write a story about, you know, finances. But it's basically like the tax rate goes from like 13% to 5%. Right. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Wendy's new favorite talking point is to bash California taxes, I've noticed.
Well, I have a general problem with people talking about taxes in the NBA anyway, because people – When a guy signs with the Rockets or he signs with the Heat, they go, oh, he gets it tax-free. It's not tax-free. it's tax free in the games that they play in Florida, which is still a lot of money, but I'm annoyed by people when they say tax free. But nonetheless, Blake Griffin traded $40 million, which is a ton of money, for the right to be traded. If he had said, you know what, I don't want that fifth year, he probably could have gotten a no trade clause in a 4-year contract. Okay. He traded the $40 million for the opportunity to probably get traded. And I think it was probably a good financial deal, because when he's in the fifth year of that deal, I almost will guarantee you he's not going to be a $38 million player.
Yeah, I think that's safe to assume. I mean, I think the one key point here is, like, you know, so many times when we're analyzing these transactions, and when I say, you know, this is me rushing to complete often a story about it, you know, the dollar figure ends up being really important. Where the player is going be ends up being really important. And then something like the no trade clause is kind of like a detail that, you know, comes out a little bit later and isn't seen as important as the dollar figure. But in a case like this, it can prove extraordinarily crucial.
Well, those no trades are, I mean, they're killers. I mean, they really are. I mean, even the guys that have them, you know, the one-year bird guys, the Mirotić of the world, I mean, those guys are – even those guys are hesitant to waive those in a deal. I mean, dude, we had Devin George and that Jason Kidd trade back in 08 who we had to sit outside his house because he wouldn't waive his one-year bird with the paperwork to have him try to get him to sign it. And we were waiting for him to come out of the house, and he wouldn't do it.
I mean, with the lay of the land right now, I would advise Niko Mirotić not to waive his no trade clause. I would advise him not to become an unrestricted free agent, because as good of a season as he's having, I believe it will be difficult for him to get $16 million in free agent money next year. I think his better option is to force the Bulls to pick up the option so that they can trade him. That would be my advice to him. Now, he may think he's having an all-star level season and that he will get a max contract offer, and that is where his agent comes into play. But I would advise him, after, with the help of Bobby for a story we've coming soon, heavily researching the market this summer, I would advise all players with reasonable options in their contracts, I would advise them to pick them up. That means you, Enes Kanter. That means you, DeAndre Jordan. It'll be much better to be a free agent in 2019 than it is in 2018, unless you are a premium free agent such as Paul George, such as LeBron James. I just don't think the money is going to be out there in between the mid-level and the max like we've seen the last couple of years. But
speaking of that, I was wondering what you guys thought. That do you view the Clippers moving Blake Griffin as more a play for 2018 or 2019? Which class do you think that they've got their eye on? And I assume DeAndre has something to do with this if they can offload DeAndre.
I mean, even if they get off DeAndre, Austin Rivers is going to likely opt in, and Wes Johnson's going to opt in. I mean, I went through last night. Basically, if they didn't bring back DeAndre, Avery, and Lou, and let's say they just kind of wipe the slate, the most they could create is like $15 million in room. And then if you got rid of like Teodosic and Beverly, it gets maybe like 25, 26. But what are you selling? Yeah. I mean, you got Gallinari and some draft picks. So I think it's more of a play. I think it gives them the flexibility, but I think it's more of a play for 19 when really just Gallinari, and then your whoever you draft is really on your books.
And I don't feel like short term that the Clippers are going to be a good free agent destination, to be honest with you, because they, especially if they trade DeAndre, who's their drawing card? Nobody.
You could get your jersey retired there, Brian. Apparently,
I don't even know. Like, it's unclear to me whether Doc's going to be their coach after this year. So, you know, there are a lot of players who want to play for Doc. You know, that to me is up in the air. So I don't know if planning for 2018 free agency would even be prudent on the Clippers' minds right now. I think it looks to me like they're retrofitting a little bit.
Royce, Pelton, both of you guys have been getting Sunbasket now.
Yes,
that is correct.
And KP, we know that you are a big chicken guy and you enjoy the new recipes you're getting. Royce, how do you feel about Sunbasket?
I got my first Sunbasket about a week ago. And I want to say that we made, I think it was like some Korean sliders with this slaw. And You know, honestly, Han, the thing that about it that I found weird when I was putting it together, is I was like, this is too easy. And I'm serious. I was like, I feel like I'm missing steps right now because this is going way too fast and way too easy. And I almost felt like somebody was cooking it for me because it was far too simple to do.
Royce, as a Korean person, I want you to know that we are incredibly easy to put together. Not complicated at all.
It doesn't take much to do. Wow.
KP, how's your follow-up experience been?
It was good. Last week had a Thai coconut noodle, coconut milk soup based dish. So that was really good.
I'm trying to think. We also made, I'm trying to remember what it was exactly. I can't remember what the name of it was. It was kind of like a soup thing. And, what did it have in it? Every Sunbasket comes with some sort of ingredient that I've literally never heard of. I can't remember what the big bean was that it was, but it was some like kind of like bean thing.
The pozole?
I think that's what it was. Yes, yes.
I don't know if that's actually how it's pronounced. That's how I was taking it as pronounced. But yeah, wow. that was something I'd never. It was hominy.
Hominy. That's what it was. Before. Hominy. That's the ingredient that I was like, I've never even heard of this. But as I ate it, I thought it was actually my wife is the one that made that one. She made it for lunch, and she like didn't want to say anything to me about it. And she wanted to be like, okay, I want, cause I'm kind of a picky eater. And she was like, you know, didn't want to give her score. And I took a bite and I was like, hey, this is really good. And she was like 10 out of 10. She was like 10 out of 10. This is super.
Yeah. The hominy was an unexpected surprise.
Yeah. It was very good. Go to sunbasket.com/hoop today to learn more and get $35 off your first order.
That's sunbasket.com/hoop for $35 off.
sunbasket.com/hoop.
Is this just like an Asian themed month or something? Like, why are both?
I don't know.
What's going on?
That's mostly what I've gotten though.
Same here. Yeah, I think we've gotten the same sets of food. So I don't know how they have chosen that, but yes, a lot of Asian inspired dishes.
It's possible it's because I submitted your names and I'm Asian, so they're like, they must love Asian people. So let's give.
I'm not going to lie. That thought ran through my head, but I didn't want to say it out loud.
I want to talk a little bit about the Pistons real quick. Let me paint a financial picture of the Pistons. They are in severe financial hardship. Now, they have a wealthy owner, and maybe he can shoulder it, but I just want to lay some things out. Last year, the Pistons lost $62 million. Playing in their final year in Auburn Hills. That was the most by any team in the league. They received a revenue sharing check from their partners, which lowered their overall loss to $45 million. But they lost more money than any team in the league last year, even more money than the Brooklyn Nets, who, sorry, Bobby, are
money. I've been there in 3 years. It's not my
right.
fault.
Wipe your hands clean, Bobby.
They are a money pit right now. The Pistons lost $45 million last year after revenue sharing. They moved out of the building that they owned in Auburn Hills and into a new building in downtown Detroit where they are not drawing flies. You know, I don't have the actual numbers, but my guess would be that they will have less income this year than they did last year. Now, it's a long-term play. And, you know, maybe in 5 years, this move will have yielded terrific results and it will have been well worth it and smart and a great play. But short-term here, they are losing tens of millions of dollars. They are in a position where they are paying Stan Van Gundy a lot of money, a super premium. He's one of the highest paid coaches in the league because he's a coach and president to run that team. And they are in danger of missing the playoffs. And Stan Van Gundy's job, in my opinion, is in jeopardy. So we have a team that's losing money, not drawing fans, and a coach who's under a lot of pressure. To me, you have a recipe there for the word desperation. And if Stan was on here right now, he may come back at me with guns blazing, telling me that I'm full of it. And he may have 37 basketball reasons why this trade works. To me, I smell a team that was desperate. They saw a window to make one of the biggest trades in Pistons history. Certainly, probably the biggest trade bringing in talent since Rasheed Wallace. Unless anybody wants to disagree with me, they traded away some guys. They, you know, I guess Allen Iverson was a big trade, although Iverson was past his prime. But certainly, arguably the biggest trade since Iverson, and that's been maybe 8-9 years. So a huge moment for the Pistons to do this. And I think it's a move made out of desperation. Now, sometimes desperation moves play out. Maybe Blake will be terrific. Maybe they will qualify for the playoffs and even get a higher seed than 8 and put a scare into somebody because of Blake. But I view this as a desperate move. I'd listen to what you guys think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. You know, you watch a Pistons game and you see all those bright red empty seats, Ludwig colored empty seats in that lower bowl. And yeah, I mean, the case for this deal is Blake Griffin is going to bring excitement and, you know, should help with that. And in the short term, it probably will make them a better team. It's just a question of, you know, how much you're sacrificing down the road. Are people still going to be so excited about seeing Blake Griffin, you know, when he's into his 30s, when he's no longer the spectacular dunker that we remember, and he's just kind of the, you know, giant point forward who is, aging slowly and, you know, maybe suffering injuries. That's a different question. And as you point out, I mean, this is basically their team. You right up against the luxury tax next summer, as Bobby can detail, and it's not going to get much better the summer after that. It's really not until Reggie Jackson's contract expires that they have much in the way of financial flexibility. And even then, you know, you're still going to be paying probably more than half of your cap to Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin. And that's going to really, you know, there's only so much you're going to be able to do around those two guys.
What this is really about, though, is like just how you feel about Blake Griffin, right? And, you know, if you're going to sit here and say that, you know, This is risky from a financial aspect for the Detroit Pistons. But, you know, we're talking about the Pistons have made a move for a guy that they have locked up long term now. You know, so I sit here in Oklahoma City and the Thunder made a move on the opposite end of the spectrum where they gave up young talent themselves that they had controllable over the next number of years in Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis to take a 1-year run at Paul George with the hope of potentially re-signing him. And everybody loved that move. They thought it was a great move for the Thunder. They thought it was what they needed to do. And, you know, it may or may not have helped Russell Westbrook make a decision to sign an extension. So the move for Oklahoma City is already a success, whether or not Paul George decides to stay. The Pistons make a move for a star in his quote-unquote prime, right? I mean, these are Blake Griffin's prime years. And like you said, KP, he might not necessarily be the athletic specimen that he once was, but neither is Paul George. So, like, and Blake Griffin does play a different position, and these aren't necessarily comparable players. But from my perspective, yes, I see the risk that the Pistons have taken on, but I think the way that people feel about it is that they're really sitting here, and what they want to say is they don't think Blake Griffin's a star. They don't think he's a franchise player. And right. While Blake Griffin is really good, there's no doubt about it. 22-8-5. You saw what he did for that Clippers team in the postseason where he basically averaged a triple-double. Maybe a change of scenery helps. I don't know. You know, he clearly, I think, needs a facilitator. And to me, if Blake Griffin is your second best player or debatable third best player, then you got a really, really good team. Blake Griffin really can't be your first best player.
Oh, well, he's being paid like a first best player. Roy
well, but that's just, I mean, but that's just, that's business in the NBA, right? I mean, you can't get it. There's no way around that. So, I mean, you know, Steven Adams is the Thunder's third or fourth best player, and he's being paid like that. So, you know, that's just the cost of doing business to acquire these players. I mean, that's what every team is trying to do, is you're trying to stack stars on top of each other to get into contention. The Pistons' financial outlook clouds this more, I think, than any other team. But from my perspective, the Pistons got a star level player in his prime, and he's on a contract for the long term. Shouldn't that be a good move? Shouldn't that be a slam dunk? No pun intended with Blake Griffin there. That was terrible. But I understand the concerns, but I don't dislike this as much as other people do from the Pistons aspect.
I'm going to make you dislike it right now. I'm going to pull up his salaries. And we'll see how much you dislike it as the years go on.
See, but Brian, 2018-19, when he signed it, it's like, you really want to pay Russell Westbrook $44 million? It's like, of course you do. He's Russell Westbrook. What's your alternative? Do you want Russell Westbrook or not? Like, I mean, that's the way it goes.
Bobby, the conventional wisdom in the public space is if you get the best player in a trade, you win. But Wendy is really pushing this idea that the Pistons did not win this.
I would say that there is significant risk involved with this trade, and they know it, and they are ready to face the consequences, and they know what the consequences will be if this trade does not work out. And the consequences will be is that you will probably see a major shakeup in that front office, either with the coach, or the coach loses his front office loses the right to oversee the personnel department there, and that is a push your chips to the middle type trade. I think a lot of it, I think the trade, what it says also is that we have not drafted well the last 3 years. We have missed out. I think if you had been able to draft and be able to hit on some of these picks, I think the trade is a little bit less worrisome, because, you know, as I always say, that's your next layer of players. But I mean, look who you, and I like Luke Kennard, and I think he could be a good player, but
Mitchell instead, they'd feel a lot different.
Yeah, you've drafted Stanley Johnson, Henry Ellison, and Luke Kennard. I mean, that's your last three years of drafts. It's a team, as you guys have said, who was vulnerable right now because they've lost 8 in a row. They've got Cleveland tonight, who they'll probably lose because they don't have any of these guys likely playing because of the trade.
They're two players.
And we are – how many games are we in? 50? What do we got left? 30? How many – 30-something games?
About 30,
35 left.
I mean, I guess you can hang your hat on that they've got, well, I think, the fourth easiest schedule here. So it's a high risk, and we see what happened in New Orleans, okay? When you have those two monsters down there and you have a hard time putting pieces around them, then you are content to being a 6-8 seed every year. And if that's what they want to be, then I guess it's okay, but you're just going to be limited doing so.
Kelton, can you assess for me the difference between having Tobias Harris as your starting four and Blake Griffin as your starting four?
I mean, Blake's better, despite the fact that Tobias Harris has the better RPM so far this season. I think that's, you know, somewhat fluky. If you look at the multi-year version that's not on the website, Blake Griffin is better, and he's rated better certainly by the box score stats. But, you know, I think it's probably, especially when you factor in that Tobias Harris is much more durable than Blake Griffin, that's probably like a 3-win difference, I would say, between those two guys, which I think gets to the point, like, is Blake Griffin a superstar? Is, you know, what level is he? I mean, I went back and looked at the NBA rank before this season, which, you know, obviously he was coming off an injury, and I think that factored in. We didn't know his availability was going to be, but he was 24th in the league. And to your point earlier, Brian, about, you know, is this the most salary a team has ever traded? It must be, because there's only four guys in NBA history five guys, I think, that have signed larger contracts than Blake Griffin has left on his contract after this season. Those being the other guys who have signed maxes the last 2 years: Conley, John Wall, Steph Curry, James Harden, and Westbrook.
So we have no idea what the future will be, because we have no idea about health. We have no idea about how the teammates are going to fit around him, their role, what have you. But Tobias Harris is making $14.8 million next year. Blake Griffin is making – let's just talk about next year. Blake Griffin will be making – where's my number? 31.8.
But what is Tobias Harris going to be making in 2021?
Brian, you're shortchanging because you got to add the $215,000 from the trade bonus.
Okay, you're right, Bobby.
Bobby.
I should never try to go toe to toe with Bobby when it comes down to this stuff. So it's essentially double. It's about double. And that's just for next year. I know what you're saying. You're saying, what's Tobias Harris going
to
make in 19?
You're going to have to pay him too, right?
I know, but I'm just, you're not going to pay him $30 million.
Brian, is the point that you're making that there are, what can we say, like less than 5 players in the league that actually merit the Supermax?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, like, are we seeing like kind of a correction to what the NBA has kind of gone through where it's like everybody gets a max contract? If you're just a good player, it's like, here you go.
Well, the Supermax is going to be really interesting to write an analysis of this in 3 years. Pelton probably could turn it out in 15 minutes, but we've already seen some teams that are not so crazy about giving the Supermax. Like the Kings put their tail between their legs on DeMarcus and dealt him. We've also seen some players who don't think the Supermax is worth sticking it out for. For example, Paul George did not stick it out to try to get the Supermax. Kyrie Irving was a little bit longer of a shot, but it could have happened. Mm-hmm. He punted on the Supermax. It's not having, on the other hand, James Harden signed it within 5 minutes. Westbrook took a little bit longer, but he signed it. John Wall signed it, and now he's having another knee surgery. It also has held players, but I would say the results have been mixed, and it's unclear. There's a gigantic test case coming in San Antonio this summer.
So, Brian, let me ask you: so if the Pistons don't do this deal, and again, I completely understand the perspective that is Blake Griffin specifically worth it or not? But if the Pistons don't do this sort of deal, what is their building path? Where do they go from here? They've already bottomed out. They tried drafting and developing. Obviously, as Bobby outlined, they haven't necessarily hit on those picks. They tried signing free agents in the past. That failed spectacularly. So where do the Pistons go? What would have been their plan if they don't take a swing at a star?
It's a great question, and that would have been what their interviews would have been for
for the next guy.
for president, right? GM.
Next management group would have answered that. Hey, and this is what I always ask when there's a deal made and there's these large salaries. I always say to the teams or the general manager, I say, well, if you had cap space, would you have gone after Blake? Like, let's say for Detroit. A good question for Stan or Jeff Bowers. If you had cap space this summer, would you have gone after Blake Griffin as a free agent and committed this type of salary? I mean, that's kind of how I try to phrase it, because if they say, well, I don't know, then why the hell did you do the deal then? So you're content that you would have signed him as a free agent for whatever is on his contract, then you've got to live with that.
And I think it's one thing, by the way, to, I think that Stan Van Gundy's answer under truth serum would have been yes to that. But it's one thing to, just take Blake into space in that kind of deal. It's another thing to give up Tobias Harris, who, as we've established, is on a good contract for the next year. Avery Bradley, who, whatever you think of him as a player, you could have, I think, very likely gotten a first-round pick out of someone for him in an alternative trade, which maybe is what was happening yesterday.
Maybe it still might happen.
He was available. But it won't be the Pistons getting that one now. And you gave up what might be a lottery pick this year. So that's a lot more value on top of just
they would have taken a bad
Blake
player
Griffin
anyway,
his salary over the next 5 years.
They know themselves.
This is one question I want to get out there, and KP, maybe you've already answered this. Did the Clippers get as much as they could for Blake Griffin? Because it feels like they could have gotten a little more.
They offered him around to everybody.
I don't know if that's true.
They made calls to Oklahoma City for Paul George. I'm pretty sure that they made calls to Minnesota for players. So, they tried to get some bigger name players that just wasn't happening.
Yeah, and I guess it's just, do you want to consolidate all that value in terms of getting one better player? I mean, maybe they could have gotten a single player who is better than Tobias Harris in return for Blake Griffin, but you're probably not also getting Avery Bradley. You're not also getting the pick. and maybe you're taking on worse salary. You know, in this deal, Boban is basically the only bad salary they're taking on. So I think it would have been very hard for them to do much better than this, which then maybe is a case that I should have given them a better grade than it.
I mean, do you think that they targeted Detroit for this deal? Like, do you think it was like, okay, let's call Detroit and this is the package we'd like?
I think the hook was in the water and the team with 8 straight losses bid and they reeled as fast as they possibly could.
Right.
And I think too, I know he's been healthy lately, but I mean, I think if you're intent on moving him, then you do it as soon as you can because you don't know when the next injury is going to come with him. And I think whenever the next injury comes, I think that diminishes his value even more.
And whatever you think of the contract, the best years of it are going to be now while he's in his prime and making less money and not the back end of the contract when he's going to be older and making way more money. This is kind of the fundamental thing of NBA contracts is because of the fact that they almost always increase. The best years are almost always at the start of them, and you want to get off the bad years at the end.
So, Andrew, how is the Clippers fan base reacting to this?
It is split between distraught and completely miserable. Obviously, a lot of people became Clippers fans when Blake Griffin had that emergent rookie season, and a lot of fans feel like he was one of the main reasons why the Clippers kind of rose up the way they did. Obviously, Chris Paul does not accept coming to Los Angeles if Blake Griffin wasn't on the Clippers. But at the same time, there's been this kind of a trust in the front office like there hasn't been, because obviously Donald Sterling was there for a long time and Doc was running the ship before that. There's been a lot of like, we trust in Jerry West kind of mentality. And that's been kind of curious as well. I don't know. It's a lot of sad people, but also a lot of people that are curious to see what's going to happen.
Andrew, would people's reaction be different if this team wasn't competing for a playoff spot? Let's say if they were like the Hawks or the Kings right now, and they were 14-34 and they had bottomed out. I mean, would you think because they are, you know, they do have a chance, they, you know, I mean, you know, it's probably still do based on what New Orleans, but you think that has a, or is it just because of Blake, the person, the player alone?
Well, I think more than that, it's just the fact that the Clippers have had, six and a half years of sustained success, and that's the first time that's ever happened in franchise history. And fans that have been longtime fans, even recent fans, that's not something that people let go easily. Like, Bobby, I'm sure you're well aware of this, even for, like, front offices, that whole Joe Johnson, Atlanta Hawks, the treadmill of mediocrity, it's tough to let go any kind of success. And so I think that is really what's driving a lot of this. Like, it's scary to give up this known quantity. The idea that you're at least going to be competing for the playoffs every year, you'll at a minimum be a 500 team and kind of go into the unknown.
Doesn't that suggest, though, like to what Bobby's saying, that Blake Griffin is pretty good? I mean, like, they're not the Hawks, they're not the Kings, they're not toiling away. I mean, the Clippers against all odds. I mean, they traded Chris Paul away and they lost Patrick Beverley for the season. They don't have Danilo Gallinari and Blake Griffin, and they have a chance at a playoff seed in the Western Conference. I mean, I think that says that Blake Griffin actually is a pretty good player.
I heard from Chris Paul that Lou Williams is their best player.
Now, that's an interesting thing. Like, Lou Williams' situation is very interesting to me because Steve Ballmer, you know, Lou Williams has brought an incredible amount of excitement to that team for this year. And he may keep some excitement level in that team. And Steve Ballmer, I can tell, loves Lou Williams. And the thing about it is, like, this is his 13th year.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. Yeah.
Very
13th year, yeah.
Very unusual for a player to have his best season in his 13th year. And certainly very dangerous to sign said player, to think that his 13th year is going to portend what his 14th year will be. But
oh, by the way, it's a contract year, Brian. Can you believe it?
Yeah, it's, like, I definitely think that DeAndre Jordan could slash will go. The Lou Williams one is a little bit more complicated, because even though it makes complete and total sense to trade Lou Williams with his value this high, I mean, that's a reason to keep watching Clipper games.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the market for Lou Williams is going to be next summer. I'm not so sure he gets more than the mid-level. And I know that sounds shocking, but, you know, we just wait for Bobby and my story to come out later this week. You will see that there's just not much of a market.
I mean, Kevin can help out too with that. I mean, like, I told Brian, like, the mid-level is going to be like the key words this summer. I mean, that's what it is, unless the guys re-sign with their own teams. So if you put him out there without the Clippers, I mean, maybe he's a guy that does a Redick type deal. Maybe that not much money, but it's only a 1 year deal. So, you know, if it's a straight contract, I think he's probably maybe a little bit right around, maybe or a little bit less than what the mid levels projects to be.
And speaking of Lou Williams, I do think the Clippers deserve some credit here, because if you think about it realistically, you know, Blake Griffin was a free agent last summer. They were set to lose Chris Paul. They could have been sitting here without Chris Paul and without Blake Griffin and had none of these players. They could have had no Lou Williams, no Patrick Beverley, no Montrezl Harrell. I mean, down the line. So, you know, the fact that they no Sam Decker. So the fact that they do have something to show for all this, and then obviously all that they got for Blake Griffin. I mean, they could have been looking at a world where they had none of that, and they could have just lost two players.
Well, I'm sort of developing. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here on this story, but I'm sort of in my head calling it the Evan Turner, Marcus Smart paradox. Evan Turner, Marcus Smart played on the same team in the 2015-16 season. You probably talked to a number of different people involved with the Celtics, their fans, to argue who was a more important player. But there are some people that would say Marcus Smart was more important that season. There were some people who would say Evan Turner was more important. But even though they're different players, their contributions were comparable. Can we agree on that? Does anybody have an issue with that?
No issue here.
RPM Evan, has some issue with that.
So what is of course what is RPM say? Please educate me.
Well, I mean, Smart is always rated very well by that in terms of his on-court impact, and Turner has not generally.
Okay, fair enough. So by certain metrics, Smart, I'll tell you this, I'd rather have Marcus Smart.
Yeah, I mean, this only adds to your point, really.
Okay. Evan Turner signed a contract that pays him $17 million a year because he became a free agent in the greatest year to be a free agent in the NBA history. Marcus Smart will be a restricted free agent this summer. And I understand that restricted versus unrestricted is a factor here. Marcus Smart will do well to get more than the mid-level. And the only place he's probably getting more than the mid-level is Boston. And the mid-level is 7.8?
It's going to be like 8.6, somewhere around.
Oh, 8.6. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. 8.6. And it's going to be very difficult for Marcus Smart to come to grips with that. And that has nothing to do. The only thing it has to do is with timing. And so if you're Lou Williams, and if you're the Clippers especially, I think that you can surmise that you may be able to keep Lou Williams at a number that doesn't upset the apple cart, at a number of years that doesn't upset the apple cart. You're rolling the dice on that a little bit, but it may keep your second, you know, the last part of your season and entertaining. But I just think this summer, you know, a guy like Marcus Smart is going to be the test case for who probably could have gotten 16 or 17 million 2 years ago. He may, if he's lucky, get 10 million. I would almost wager less than 10 million.
I don't want to go too long into this because we're already going long as it is. But Brian, when do the bulk of players get upset that the union refused cap smoothing a couple of years ago? Because that's largely what you're talking about now.
About July 6th, 2018.
And you know when they're all going to be happy again? In 2020, when all these bad contracts are off the books and we start the cycle over again.
Right, exactly.
for this summer, I mean, just doing the research for Brian, it was worse than what I thought it was going to be, because of the teams. You know, I mean, there's really only six or seven teams that will have cap space.
There are six or seven teams that have cap space, but only, in my mind, three or four that are actually going to spend it.
Yes,
because you are correct. Two or three are rebuilding.
Yeah, like the Chicago Bulls and Atlanta Hawks, are not, in my mind, are not going to be handing out $17 million to Marcus Smart, for example. So I had one GM sort of give it to me like this. Even though there's no hard salary cap in the NBA, with where the luxury tax is, essentially there's only a certain amount of money that are going to get spent on players per year. And so if you picture all of the money being spent in the NBA as a big tank of water, I think, what was it last year, like about $3 billion, give or take? Mm-hmm. Let's just say it's a $3 billion tank. That's how much NBA teams are going to spend on salary. If the salary cap goes up by a moderated amount every year and a certain number of the same amount of money comes off in contracts every year, and you imagine that you drain that money out of the bottom of the tank and the tank falls below the line, and that gap between where that top of that tank is and where the water line is after all the contracts expire is about what the salaries that are going to be new. Maybe it'll vary, you know, a little bit year to year, but what's happened is that all of a sudden the water was poured into a much larger tank in 2016. And so teams started throwing water in, like, oh my God, look how much more water we can put in this tank. And now that tank is full and there's no bigger tank coming. The last couple of years, the tank's gotten bigger. Now the tank is going to be the same size, right? And they're going to open up and drain the water out. And oh boy, there's going to be a lot less water, room for new water, than there was 2 or 3 years ago. And it's just a simple mathematical thing. There's only so much money teams are going to spend. So there's just no place to put the water. And so there's going to be players, you know, basically holding their glass saying, where's mine? And that's just going to be the reality of it. And if you guys can give me a better analogy that I can put in the story, I'll be willing to workshop it right here. But that's where we're headed. And it is completely unfair to the free agents of 2018 and completely more than generous to the free agents of 2016. And I don't know, Pelton, if you were there, or Royce, if you were there, but I remember on an absolutely brutally frigid day in New York City at the All-Star Game in 2000, what year was that? 14 in New York, 2014? 2015?
I think it was 15.
2015. I remember being in a conference room at the Sheraton Hotel where the players union, Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony and James Jones and the other people stood behind Michelle Roberts, and they announced that after doing a lot of work that they were not going to accept the smoothing proposal. And that, in that quiet little room on Friday afternoon on a frigid day, was a seminal moment in NBA history. There were people who were sounding alarm bells at that time. Nobody listened to them. That was a seminal moment in NBA history. It created the Golden State Warriors as one end. On the other end, it's about to create a bear market in the NBA and really make some players upset this summer.
Also, from a team standpoint, I mean, you go to the flip side of that. Besides the Warriors, who benefited immensely from the way that worked out, for everyone else, you know, the whole idea for many, many years in the league is let's get cap space, let's have short contracts. And then that flipped in a matter of a couple of years for this brief period. And so if you were one of the teams who ended up with cap space in the summer of 2016, that ended up being the worst thing possible for you. I mean, that's the reason Portland is in this predicament, because, you know, they had all these free agents up that year. A team like Washington, which had all that money to spend that year and, you know, weren't able to get Durant or Al Horford. So you end up paying Jan Mahinmi and Jason Smith and a couple other guys, and now you're in a tax situation and have no flexibility. I mean, basically, it's just going to turn out to be a fluke of timing, you know, how good you are, I think, for several years to come.
Well, yeah, I mean, and not to steal the thunder about what's going to be in Brian's article, but basically it's the cap is only going to go up like 1.9%. All right. There's already been $3.1 billion in player salaries this year. Next year alone, there's already $3 billion committed. So going back to, you know, filling that tank, there's just not the money there for this group of free agents to, you know, to be available for them.
That's remarkable. All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up because we're getting into really the deep end of the pool here. But long story short, this is a pretty big moment for two franchises, and it'll be interesting when we are doing podcasts 18 months from now, when we look back at this trade and say, boy, was this the kickstart that the Clippers needed? Or boy, did that signify the beginning of the Clippers downturn? Boy, did that change everything in Detroit? Or boy, did that just ruin everything in Detroit and everybody's been fired? Honestly, I could go either way.
Yeah, we might have to do it in 3 months, not 18 months. We might have the answer to those questions in by mid-April there, Brian.
If the Paul George trade has taught us anything, allow us to not overreact to what either team got in return, because Tobias Harris may be an all-star next year. We don't really know.
Right. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Andrew Hahn, thank you.